Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, or if you're jet-lagged, hello, Rafe. Welcome to the All About Windows Phone Insight Podcast. I'm Ewan Spence. We're recording this on Wednesday, April the 25th, which means by the time you've heard this, all the news will have changed once more. But that's okay, because we're not clairvoyant. We're looking back over the news and features and fun of the last 7 days in the world of Microsoft's Windows Phone and everything that our partners and manufacturers and third-party developers have put together again. It's such a large area and beat to cover. I cannot possibly do it all on my own. So I have the trusty crew who are far better at all of this than I am. So added together, we are the big, scary transformer, take your pick from the aerial bots or Menasaur, of Rafe Blanford.
Hello, everybody. Great to be here.
Rafe, Decepticon or Autobot?
Autobot, of course.
David Gilson.
Hello, and if we're picking aerial bots, I'll be Superion.
Steve Litchfield.
I'll be the Nokia N93. Look it up on Google. Transformer phone. Ha-ha.
Is it an Autobot or a Decepticon?
Oh, I've no idea. I do have a new gadget in my hands. Do you want me to tell you about that?
Is it Megatron?
No. Nokia 710, Lumia 710. I just thought I'd mention that I know Rafe has had one for donkey's years. And we are getting the review, aren't we, Rafe? But in the meantime, I thought I'd give my first impressions. It's a tiny bit plasticky. It's not as plasticky as I first thought in Nokia world. And it certainly feels very solid in the hand. And my big disappointment, though, concerns the physical buttons. It's worth mentioning, this might kick off a discussion later on in the podcast, but we've been used to these capacitive screen, touchscreen phones, like the Lumia 800, like most of the Android phones, I guess the iPhone's got a big central home button. But this has got physical buttons for back and for search. And when you're actually in the middle of flowing your thumb around an interface, to have to press a physical button a millimeter just to go back, to hold it down to the multitasking, it's just a tiny, kind of ruins the experience. Maybe this is something we can come back to either in this podcast or a future podcast, guys, because it's a really interesting disruption of the main user interface. But quite pleased with it. I'm looking forward to Rafe's review and looking forward to contributing as well, because hopefully I can do parts of the camera and maybe the multimedia as well.
So there we go. We're back to the buttons, no buttons debate. We'll file that away in our ideas bank and see how Absolutely. The show running goes. As always, everybody will contribute, but we do have a chess clock running on Rafe compared to everybody else. It only goes up to 20 minutes. So we'll see how we get on with all the fun this week. In fact, let's start off with something that kicked off this morning. You would have picked it up in our flow section over All About Windows Phone. .com on the website, or if you're using the application on the latest news and flow as well. And it is the change that Microsoft are making to the Windows Marketplace. Now, there are two that are kicking in here, I understand, Rafe. One of them is happening a week or two down the line, but one of them has already been implemented.
Yes, that's right. And actually, there's three things, if we're being complete. The first one of those is that the Marketplace is being brought into a few more countries thanks to a software update, specifically place in the Middle East, Bahrain, Israel, Iraq, Kazakhstan, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, Thailand, UAE and Vietnam. So nine markets there all together. They're really open for app submissions, but it just means that consumers in those markets will actually be able to get it in their own country marketplace, if you like. But the big ones here that we're talking about, it's the fact that you'll no longer be able to browse and buy Windows Phone applications and games within the Zoom PC, kind of that desktop client. Previously, you've been able to go into the marketplace section and look at apps. You can search for apps, browse through the app list, and obviously buy and then download them. And when you next connect to your phone, they'll be downloaded to your phone. So that's actually going away. In fact, for me, that happened this morning. The feature was effectively removed from the Zoom desktop client. Quite an interesting, controversial one there. We'll come back to that in a moment. The second piece is that apps are only going to be available to those on Mango and above devices. So if you like, the minimum requirements for downloading an application are changing. So anyone on the kind of vanilla version of Windows, so in that first version or indeed on the first update, Nodo, will no longer be able to get and download apps. I don't think that's that big a deal. I imagine an awful lot of people have now updated to Mango, especially any of those people who are regularly downloading applications. And as far as we know, Mango is available for all the devices out there in the wild. But I think the first one may cause a little bit more debate.
I don't think so. Can I just put my tuppence in here? Why on earth would people want to install applications from their Zune desktop. Surely the thing we're all, even if we're tied to Windows PC, you know, for backing up and for syncing and for updating, surely just about every smartphone user wants to work away from the desktop, wants to work mobile, on the sofa, on the bed, on the couch, on the train, on wherever. And they want to browse the store and actually be able to install stuff immediately on the phone and see the results immediately. The whole point of trying to install an application on your phone from desktop computer that's tethered by a wire, it just seems completely the wrong way about. So I'm not at all concerned by this omission. I don't think anyone at all will be too bothered.
I'm actually more concerned about the way it happened. The fact that the Zune just pops up, oh, we've changed something, have a nice day. But to pick up on Steve's point, let's remember that the Zune PC is also, it's a far nicer environment to go through, for example, searching through music to do the previews and everything. And yeah, again, we have to remember, you know, there are people like us who love doing everything on the small screen, on their hand, on the sofa. There are other people who want a bigger screen, who want to be able to have that larger interface, who want to be able to process more information without scrolling and clicking and tapping and having to basically pretend that they're in that interface that they use in the computer in Akira. I think there was a place for this. But at the same time, Microsoft is moving everything to the cloud. And I think the twofold that I like about this strategy is it does move it further onto the cloud. You know, you can now use the web browser, right-click, and it will then sync it down to your phone without the cable tying. It will sync it over the cloud. And also, we have to remember that Microsoft has all the user data of how many people are actually using the Zune App Store. Now, I'm guessing that they have had problems with the Windows Marketplace in terms of resources and everything, that the amount of resources that were being used serving the Zune PC suite with the apps was completely out of whack with the way the apps were coming down. And as more people talk about applications online, more people provide links to the web-based marketplace, I think that it's just past that point where they went, you know what, it's not worth it. We're going to take the short-term pain here to have everything where we want it for Windows 8. David, you've probably relied on the web marketplace more than any other because of your desktop software, though, haven't you?
Yes, and I would be surprised if anyone really notices this change at all. I certainly have never used Zune Desktop to buy or browse applications because I actually don't think Zune provides a good purchasing experience, partly because of the Microsoft points system, but mainly because it's so incredibly painfully slow. I loaded up Zune just to check something while you were talking, and it's only just finished loading up an album for me to check out now. And so it's been like best part of a minute to load up a page, which is ridiculous. And I think actually if you want to browse and get apps from the desktop and push it to your phone, as you're saying, yes, but the web marketplace is much better. And as Steve was saying, getting a little bit behind the times, having to use a cable for everything. And if you do use the web marketplace, you can push over the internet, which is, it's much quicker, much easier, much nicer. So, yeah, I don't think anyone will notice this.
I'm not sure I agree with everybody here. I rather like being able to browse applications within the Zune client application. I will admit I probably didn't download all that many, but there certainly are a few I did. And for example, some very big games I downloaded over my computer because it's on a nice Ethernet connection, and that worked very well. Then copying, obviously, they get copied across. Yes, I think it's probably a minority. I think the point that Ewan makes about it sort of happening suddenly is a good one. People are probably wondering why this is happening. Well, although Microsoft hasn't been explicit about this, I suspect the reason is they're actually introducing more encryption and sort of digital rights management to the way apps are installed. And by having the install happen direct onto the phone rather than via PC, this is easier to manage. People actually complained about the fact that, relatively speaking, the ZAP files that get downloaded through the marketplace aren't terribly well secured. So in theory, it's quite easy to pirate applications on Windows Phone. There's been some debate about that around the developer community for some time now. So I think we're going to see a fix for that with effectively applications being encrypted as they're installed, and just making things a little bit harder. I mean, there'll always be ways around that. But as I say, I rather liked being able to have the big screen experience. It was certainly easier to find, I thought, more obscure apps, you know, going through long lists of applications very quickly. You could load up 300 or 400 apps on the screen and maybe get at some of the ones that aren't at the top of the bestseller list. So I think this will kind of further squeeze some of the apps further down the list. So I would have rather seen this to remain in place. With all that said, of course, you do have the kind of the web marketplace experience, and it's probably worth remembering that wasn't there on the first version of Windows Phone. It only got introduced with Mango. And so if you do want to have that kind of desktop experience, you can do it through the windowsphone.com website, and it's already been mentioned, have the push install to phone. And so that works pretty well. So if you're used to using Zoom regularly for doing that kind of installation process, I just recommend you switch to the desktop, to the website rather. But yes, I just feel the way this was handled, it could have perhaps been better talked about. And the one thing that's maybe worth mentioning, just in passing, of course, is that not everyone has a Wi-Fi connection. And so when you're downloading bigger apps, this was, you know, being able to go via the desktop was an advantage. I think Wi-Fi has become fairly ubiquitous, but I know there are some people who don't have it, but do have a broadband connection, who are all done via Ethernet. So there's just one or two use cases where I can think it would still be an advantage to have the desktop.
And of course, if it is where we all think it's going with Windows Phone 8, Windows 8, or I hope they call it something like Colin, then, you know, that cloud will be everything, and we'll just have to see of that building blocks coming in place, and all of that happening over the summer, ready for an even bigger push, because all Windows Phone seems to be doing is pushing, like a Formula One racing driver going around the Hungaroring. Let's take some quick steps, actually, because we all seem to have done some rather interesting stuff on the website, and I want to highlight them. Of Steve, you did a global one that went over all the All About sites, about camera innovations in the last decade. I just really liked it, and Windows Phone has a place in here as well, doesn't it?
Only a small place, but I was a bit cheeky, really, in putting it on All About Windows Phone, because there was only one entry that was directly relevant. But I think it's great for people, whichever platform they've ended up on, even if it's the iPhone or Android, or certainly Symbian, to be aware of the innovations happening across different platforms and over the whole decade. We're talking 20 different separate items, from video captures, shutter keys, Xenon flashes, specific sensor arrangements, some pretty clever stuff. And seriously, spanning a decade, and people were still suggesting things in the comments to say that you should have made this a top 30, Steve, which really just brings it home. It's, a camera in a phone is not just a matter of just snapping whatever's in front of it. There is a huge number of innovations and fiddly bits and things that make photos better, things that make the photos and the experience more adaptable. The Windows Phone specific thing, if people are wondering, I think it was about number 19 on the list, was basically for the Nokia N9 and the Lumia 800. And Nokia introduced this really rather innovative way of using a circular sensor more effectively, so that you can shoot native widescreen photos rather than simply take a 4x3 frame and then chop top and bottom off. Here with the Lumia 800 and also the Lumia 900, which has the same unit, you get a true widescreen native, I think it's about a 7-megapixel image. So I've had some very good results from my Lumia 800 with the new 12070 firmware. And people have been a bit of a naysayer about the photo quality from the Lumia 900 and 800. I think they should either take a few tips from one of my tips articles and learn to use the phone better, and certainly upgrade to the latest firmware, not to write it off, because I think the Lumia 800 camera is actually pretty decent. And yes, certainly warranted at least one place in my top 20 camera innovations. So do look that up on the site.
I mean, the one thing that gets me about the Lumia 800, and I know I'm not one to talk about cameras, is it never seems to have the same color once the picture is taken. It all looks fine on the screen, and then you hit the camera button and it takes the picture, and suddenly it's even greener, or there's a little bit blue involved, and I just find that mind-blowing. But there again, me taking a good picture is mind-blowing. Steve, one quick question, without using the word Xenon or flash, what innovation's been lost to camera phones in the last 10 years then?
What's been lost? Well, the big one, this is probably a bit of a rant, is the fact that we've lost camera protection to the extreme. That this is a new gadget and toy of Rafe's. I know he's now got an HTC One X running Android in the last couple of days, so he can talk with some sort of experience here. The very latest, the cutting edge, most expensive smartphone you can buy, HTC One X, X has got a camera that actually protrudes from the back with no protection. It's not even recessed in any way. In fact, it's offered to the world saying, scratch me, damage me. And, of course, a slighter scratch on a camera glass or camera plastic in this case. And hey, presto, all your photographs in sunlight have lens flare and marks and things are out of focus. And the one big thing we've lost is some sort of arrangement, even if it's just like a rubber thing which clips on. It's anything that protects the camera glass, the camera lenses from damage. And that's just a big rant of mine. Things like the old Nokia NE2s and NE6 and even the N95, they all had something you flicked across. And it opened up the lens of the world, and it was pristine, and it was free of dust, free of fingerprints, and free of damage. And I'd love to see more of that come on board with more modern phones.
So there we go. We're building up time on our side of the chess clock. So David, again, also in list mode this week, 20 missing things from Windows Phone. Oh, that's a lightning rod for the commenters, that one, isn't it?
Oh, and it certainly has been. And just to get the commenters going again, it didn't take me that long to come up with them either. Right. Well, what I'm going to do, I'm going to give five highlights from what I've done. And I also want to give a voice to sort of five regularly occurring things that I didn't include but were in the comments. One of my first gripes was that you can't add or remove people from social networks. So if you see someone being mentioned on Twitter and you think, oh, they look interesting, I'll follow them, you can't do it without linking out into the web browser and breaking the whole people hub experience. Calendar has got a couple of issues. The month view looks fantastic. It's really elegant and great, but it's form over function because everything's packed into such a small space. You cannot read anything apart from the date numbers. And you naturally think, oh, well, I pinched a zoom, but no, it doesn't do that. The calendar live tile, it's huge and it's neither very large or shows very much. It only shows one appointment at a time and it's a full width tile. Why can't we see more on it? The Office apps, I think the Office apps in Windows Phone 7 actually compare very well to what third-party Office Suites can do on other mobile platforms. But there are some strange omissions in features. For example, the word processor can't give you a word count. And I think that if writing is so important to you that you have to do it in a mobile phone, you probably need to know what your word count is. I know I, as a journalist, I certainly would. And also, the spreadsheet, Excel. If you're putting formulas in, again, it's fiddly to do on a phone. You would think that you would want to be able to paste a column of formulae. You can't paste formulas in Excel on Windows Phone, which seems bonkers to me. Going on to the commenters, the one that appeared the most, and I feel rather ashamed for not including it myself, but it is somewhat of a complicated, contentious issue, and that is of screenshots. There's no way for us to take screenshots without unlocking phones, and as we know with what happened with Chevron, it's become increasingly harder to be able to do that. And you'd think Microsoft would want everyone to have the tools at their disposal to publicize the platform, and screenshots, a lot to illustrate reviews and how-to guides, would be one of the most straightforward ways to do that. It isn't there. Another thing that bothered people was the limitation of the size of contact groups. You can only add 20 people. And if you want to have like a group of your family, I think most people have got an extended family of a lot more than 20 people. Also, contact migration is somewhat tricky. If you're not using a cloud sync, like say Windows Live, Google, or Outlook, if you're just like wanting to import import like CSV files, it's a very long and convoluted route to do that. Also, another thing that people mentioned a lot was there's no push notifications for Twitter replies, so you have to keep checking. And I might be wrong, but I do think that the Twitter replies and such goes through a Microsoft proxy server, which doesn't always keep up to speed. So even if you keep polling for updates, you don't always see replies that are actually there. And also, some people don't like the reliance on desktop software and the lack of mass storage, which I'm completely sympathetic with, because as I said at the beginning of the article, I think one of the defining features of a smartphone is actually something you can use as a portable computer independently of another computer, which actually disqualifies iOS and Windows Phone 7 as being smartphones.
Wow. Well, we've got a lot of time built up on the quote. The article itself, as always, you can read Steve and Rafe's and everything that we jot down over allaboutwindowsphone.com. Your comments are welcome. We keep an eye on them, and you can have a good old blarney with everybody in the comments there. Rafe, we've built up a bundle of time on the chess clock for you now. So where's Rafe been this week?
Ah, good. You mean I'm allowed to talk now?
This is what it feels like for everybody else normally on the podcast.
I've been over in Seattle at an HTC event. Actually, it's called HTC Frequencies. And what they were doing were inviting sort of, as they termed it, leading mobile influencers. It was a mixture of bloggers, online media, and other people who they were sort of drawing opinions on, but they were also having sort of in-depth briefings on some of their technology, explaining some of their thinking in terms of design, and looking at how they'd evolved over the years, and then having conversations about where technology, where mobile's going. And of course, there's a strong element of talking to each other about that fantastic opportunity. And while at the moment, HTC's focus is largely on Android around the One series launch that's going on at the moment. And to be fair, the event focused on that. There were plenty of mentions for Windows Phone. It's quite clear that HTC remains committed to it, and they will be doing stuff later in the year when the next version of Windows Phone comes out. Of course, some of the things that HTC were talking about in terms of, you know, device customization, differentiation, were easier to do on Android than they were on Windows Phone, simply because Microsoft doesn't allow for an awful lot of manufacturer customization. You know, you can obviously install apps and have your own live tiles, and you can change one of the highlight colors in the operating system itself. But compared to what HTC have done on Android with their Sense, Windows Phone hasn't received that same level of attention. We'll have to wait and see whether that changes in the future. But what HTC were talking a lot about was the importance of connecting software and hardware together to create a design experience. And we have talked about this sort of thing in the past. I think it's something that HTC have done pretty successfully in their products, and they've certainly changed from those who remember the very first HTC devices when the HTC brand didn't really exist, going right back to the original SPV, which was a Windows mobile device. And they've since evolved as the Windows mobile platform evolved, and then did the first Android device with the T-Mobile G1, you know, coming right up to date with things like the Titan 2 and the One X. So it was very interesting to get the kind of the backstory on how HTC has changed, you know, from being, I think it's fair to say, very technology led, and there's still a strong element of that in their portfolio. I think we see that in all their devices. You know, they're very good at getting technology first, but design has become more and more important. And so, for example, we heard about how, you know, design evolves throughout the lifetime of a product. And, you know, I've talked about this before, you know, how long a product life cycle on a phone is, and it will start off as, you know, basically a very boring block that's within the size range that the technology specified for that device can be fit into. But then it will evolve over time, so it, you know, go through testing and being shown to operators and being shown to other partners, and that design will gradually refine over time. So for example, we saw how the One series device, the One X, kind of evolved from a simple block to the device it is in its end product. And I mean, the One X, for those who haven't seen it, is kind of a polycarbonate body, somewhat in the style of the Lumia devices. It's not quite the sort of same oneness in its shape, if you like. The screen doesn't have quite that same glass edge to it, but it's been very nicely done. It's actually one of the Android devices that has stood out for me, certainly when I saw it at MWC, and I think I mentioned that back in an earlier podcast, that, you know, HTC, having had a 2011, which felt like they were just producing product after product with lots of different names, they've now focused down a bit. And that was obviously a very deliberate decision. They were also talking about, you know, what they looked for in terms of creating experience that their customers would enjoy. So that came down in Windows Phones to things like, you know, some of the extra software that they would install. But probably is most fully realized, say, in Sense on Android. A good example of this is the work HTC has done with the camera. in the One X, the image sense kind of branding is quite well known about. And that's optics and it's also software. It was something Steve mentioned in his top 20 camera innovations we talked about earlier, the ability to capture still images while recording video. But we've also seen it on Windows Phone in HTC's devices. You know, they've added extra bits into the software, the panorama mode and the burst mode, for example. And that's really about differentiating around specific product experiences. And that's the sort of thing we can expect to see a lot more of from HTC. You know, we've talked a lot about how Nokia are looking to differentiate their devices, you know, be it Nokia Drive, Nokia Music and so on. HTC will be looking to do exactly the same thing. We've seen the start of that, but I think there's probably more to come. So it'll be very interesting comparing Nokia and HTC's approach, you know, come the momentum around the launch of the next version of Windows Phone. And I suspect in many ways they may be the two Windows Phone manufacturers to watch more so than some of the others. So second half of this year, there's certainly going to be a lot to look forward to and see. With the HTC Frequency event, a lot of the information was kind of background information about how the company thinks, you know, where its design decisions come from, its philosophy, if you will. That's quite important when you're writing about products because you can start to understand, you know, where they've come from or why decisions have been made in a certain way. And that allows us to write more accurately about them and sort of give you the information, the background story, which I think a lot of our readers and our listeners to this podcast are interested in. So we hope to be able to bring you more of that in the future and certainly inform my view of HTC and their strategic direction. I should say, in the interest of full disclosure, that HTC paid for the flight and the hotel out there and looked after us very well, but I feel it was well worthwhile for the amount of extra accuracy and detail we'll be able to bring to our reporting in the future. So it was, you know, a very interesting event, kind of unusual in that sense. You know, usually we get these kind of launch events where we're talking very specifically about one product. This was more about, you know, if you like, the way of working. And HTC were trying to communicate, you know, on their brand promise, you know, how they actually did things. And of course, there were no specific details about upcoming products. You wouldn't expect that. But it was made quite clear that, you know, Windows Phone is still very much a part of their plans. So we'll be watching the second half of the year when Windows Phone next comes along to see what they'll be doing. And, you know, as we've heard from many other sources, you know, be it Verizon in their earnings call last week, or some of the other manufacturers, some of the operators, you know, there's quite a lot of bullishness around the next version of Windows Phone. And that certainly seems to be shared by HTC as well. So I await developments with a great deal of interest, and we will, of course, be keeping you up to date with those.
Actually, let me just pick up on that last point there, and the point of networks pushing Windows Phone. I mean, I know we've seen Verizon many times before going, oh, we're looking at Windows Phone. And it almost sometimes feels like a spoiler for whatever AT&T is doing in America. And I know a lot of people have said, oh, they want another operating system in there, so they've got leverage against Android. But, you know, speaking to HTC, I mean, surely they must be in a similar position. You know, are they playing, is this, are you seeing them actually committed for 50-50, or is it lip service, or is it just something to keep them in the game in case things go crazy with Android? I mean, what sort of sense do you get from America as a whole of how the industry regards Windows Phone?
Well, I think for HTC at the moment, it's quite clear that Android is the priority. But you do get a sense that, you know, Windows Phone does remain an important element for them. Now, whether that's because of their history then, obviously there weren't any kind of direct, this is what the situation, this is how we compare them. It'd be not suicidal, but obviously no company's going to make that kind of statement. But I do get the feeling, and this is really my own opinion, that it's in HTC's interest to, you know, keep it a foot in each camp, if you will, simply because that keeps their options open and allows them to have the sort of largest possible addressable market. But there does seem to be this feeling of optimism around Windows Phone. And I made reference to Verizon there. It's probably worth just mentioning that in a bit more detail. They had an earnings call and their CEO was talking about, you know, what their plans were strategically. And they were saying, you know, next version of Windows Phone, we're actually going to do what we did with Android. And Verizon say that, you know, we made Android as a platform. And if you look back to the early history with the Droid devices in particular, it's not an unreasonable claim, particularly in the US market. So, you know, Verizon to be that bullish about it before we're actually seeing devices being announced, before we got much details of the platform, was quite surprising for me. And this idea that operator friendliness is going to be important, I think all the platforms want to be operator friendly. Apple maybe being the exception there. They think they can do things their own way, but certainly, you know, the Android device manufacturers will do whatever they can to be friendly to operators. But the idea that operators want to avoid a kind of a duopoly, and I think in one sense you can almost set iPhone apart given their relation with operators. So avoiding a monoculture of Android devices, I think, is something that's very much in the operator's interest, because it allows them a certain amount of power if they're, you know, they do have choice and their consumers have choice. And operators are continually fighting this battle for relevance. And while a lot of people seem to want them to roll over and be a dumb pipe, I think that's, you know, an oversimplification. They really need to become a smart pipe and offer services over the top. You know, that's all part of the business dynamic. And so that's why I think, you know, certainly, you know, assume it gets to a basic level of competence, which, you know, really it is at the moment, especially if it can then push that on with the next version of Windows Phone. Operators and device manufacturers like HTC, by the same token, and Samsung, you know, also doing Windows Phone devices and potentially others, will be thinking from a strategic point of view, you know, because what's best now may not be what's best in a few years' time. And I think this particularly applies to Windows Phone. You know, you could maybe take short-term gains, but would that have an impact on your long-term sustainability? And I think for the manufacturers, and particularly for the operators, in terms of their sustainability, it's very much in their interest to have multiple platforms.
And there we are. Normality is resumed with Ray from the podcast. We actually didn't even have that in our show notes. We just did a little digression. But that's what happens. Going back onto the show notes, though, show notes that we uploaded to the cloud so we could all read them. And now, of course, we have another option there as SkyDrive is once more improved, both on Microsoft's cloud servers, on the desktop, and on the handset as well. David has the lowdown. Let's press the sync button, David. What's happening?
Okay, well, with the Windows Phone 7 client, there isn't actually a lot to report. The SkyDrive app has been updated to version 2.0. It does appear to be much faster, more stable, and the one thing that I like, and this is very geeky, it actually selecting multiple files for moving and deleting and copying, which is something Windows Phone 7 in general woefully lacks, so I was really glad to see that. There's no other obvious updates, and I did, when I was actually looking around at the news reporting on this, I did actually feel there was some misreporting on it, because there was mentions of photo thumbnails being introduced with this version. No, that was in version 1.0. And the other update with SkyDrive last week is that Microsoft introduced its own short URL system, sdrv.ms. That is not supported in version 2 of SkyDrive for Windows Phone. If you share a file with someone, the link is a long form URL. SkyDrive your domain, so that's not in there either, but that'll probably come in time. The big news, though, is that there is actually a desktop client for SkyDrive for Windows 7 and OS X, and there's also a Metro version for the Windows 8 consumer preview. How this works, it's very much like Dropbox. Everything is synced via a separate SkyDrive folder in your user area in Windows. However, you can set that folder to be somewhere else. So you could set it to be your Documents folder. You could set it to be your Dropbox folder for double redundancy. There isn't a selective folder sync option. However, you can hack around that, actually. If you look up my article on All About Windows Phone about this, you'll find that on OS X, you can do symbolic links. And on Windows Phone, you can... Windows 7, you can do a directory junction, which will make it look as if directories outside of your SkyDrive folder are inside them. The one problem that I've had with the desktop SkyDrive application is that I did actually set up directory junctions so that my Documents folder and my desktop folder would be synchronized with SkyDrive, and it is being very slow to it was only 2 gigabytes to upload, but it's still trying to do it over 24 hours later, and it seems to upload in little spurts, and whenever it does that, it takes a huge amount of CPU, and on my laptop, it really drains my extra large battery in less than an hour. So I think we need to tweak the performance a little bit.
And this is the interesting thing. You move on to the desktop, you have a huge range of hardware, circuitry, bits and pieces being used. It's one of the things, of course, that mobile phones have less of a problem with. Of course, the problem is still there. Rafe, you were saying that it's there's a couple of issues you wanted to bring up on this one as well, yes?
Yes, I mean, part of the reason for that simplicity on folders that David was talking about is SkyDrive is, of course, designed to work with multiple computers, and as soon as you start including multiple folders, you can upset the directory structure on, you know, kind of multiple computers, if you will. So, you know, you may have a folder on one computer but not the other. Obviously, it can get around that by creating things, but often that will lead to duplication. So my understanding, that's why they've gone for the, you know, simple single folder approach. As David says, you know, you can mix and match that and change where it actually is. But I think for most people, that will be kind of sufficient. The big thing about this desktop application is it effectively makes SkyDrive just another destination in Windows Explorer. So in the file system, you just sit kind of as another drive, or actually it's another folder, another location on your computer, which means, of course, that any application that has the standard file dialogues, you know, open, save, etc., can actually work directly with SkyDrive. And of course, as far as it's concerned, it looks like a local file or local network drive, if you will. So that makes the kind of the full cloud experience, I think, it arrives on personal computers this way. So, for example, you know, you can start a document in Word on the desktop, you save it to your SkyDrive, that's great. But then you're at a friend's house, you use their computer, you log on to skydrive.com. There you can actually use Word for Web, you know, that's web in the web browser, sorry, Word in the web browser, I should say, to edit that document, maybe make a few changes. That's great. You know, you save that and it goes back to SkyDrive. You can actually work on it with multiple people as well, should you wish to, especially if you've shared that file out. But then you can open it up on your Windows Phone device and edit it in Word for Windows Phone. It's all within the Office Hub, and SkyDrive is there as one of the places you can open files and folders from. Make some more edits, and then you get back to your desktop, and all of those edits and changes are in the original file, which you can open as you would any other Word file. So that complete kind of experience of cloud document management and storage works really well with that kind of addition of this missing component. Now, it's been there for a while for those who use something like SharePoint. That's really been an enterprise solution, but it really means it's available for the, you know, for the consumer. And I mean, there have been plenty of services like this around. You know, Dropbox is a great example, but it was missing some of the components, particularly the ease of integration directly into the platform, be that Windows Phone, or then the kind of the web version didn't have versions that you could open up the files in. Google Docs, of course, gets very close to this as well, and Google announced their own kind of cloud announcement with their Google Docs effectively converting over to Google Drive, which does much the same thing as I've just talked about. You know, you can do that complete round tripping. I'd actually say the Microsoft version is probably superior, because if you're using Google Docs, or sort of the Word, the spreadsheet element of that, you actually have to convert into Google's own format before using it, before doing the editing. You can read the files fine, but not edit without conversion. And so that can introduce some round-tripping problems. So, you know, Microsoft's solution just feels a bit more seamless. I mean, it's also probably worth pointing out that the free space you get with SkyDrive, it's 7 gigabytes first. I think it's 5 gigabytes for Google Drive. If you've used SkyDrive before, you'll remember that you get 25 gigabytes free. That will be grandfathered in. So you need to go to SkyDrive, I think sometime in the next few weeks, and just say, yes, I want that 25 gigs. Otherwise, you'll be back to 7 gigs. There are also upgrades for extra space should you want them, and they're charged on a yearly basis. Quite reasonable pricing. And actually, Microsoft comes in pretty much cheaper than anyone else, dramatically cheaper than something like Dropbox. Not that dissimilar to Google Drive. So, you know, with the announcements of the update to SkyDrive and Google Docs, both of which are really about a desktop application, is the new element, if you like. This idea of using the cloud for managing your documents suddenly becomes a reality for consumers. And you can see, you know, actually this works fantastically well. Now, of course, there are all kinds of issues around security, and do you want to store your files out on the web, on the cloud? But I think for most people, the benefits will outweigh the concerns, and maybe sensitive files, you want to keep them stored locally, of course, that's still an option. And we haven't even dived into all the details here. I mean, one of the nice features of the SkyDrive desktop application, for example, is if if you leave your computer on, you can get any file on your computer, not just ones that are in SkyDrive. It's kind of referred to as a forgotten file feature, and it's effectively just a remote controlling into your computer and being able to access any file. You can turn that off. I think quite a few people will do for security concerns. But this whole SkyDrive, we've talked about it for a while, and SkyDrive has been held up as one of the good features you get with Windows Phone. But before this time, I didn't really feel that it was that compelling experience to the average consumer. But now with it sort of being all integrated, it certainly points the way forward. And of course, this is going to be deeply integrated into Windows 8, the desktop version. I think we can assume a similar deep integration in Windows Phone, probably going on from what we have now. So suddenly this came alive for me, and I suddenly go, yes, I can see ordinary people using this.
And speaking of ordinary people, Windows Marketplace, search for SkyDrive. That's the best place to get started, or skydrive.live.com in your web browser. One more bit of software news before we go around everybody's app of the week. So thinking caps on for what you've been using in the last 7 days, guys. While I turn back to David, the behemoth that is Skype. It's out of beta, but does that mean anything's been improved?
Yes, it has been improved. How much is the question? They have introduced a few new features with this version 1.0.0.67. It now supports video calling in portrait mode, which is probably of only interest to people with a front-facing camera. There is now some friend management. You can invite, accept invitations, block and unblock people. I did try inviting someone, but it didn't work. That's my anecdotal thing. It might be that the person didn't catch it. So need more data points on that. But the main thing that I did find with this new version is that it is much more stable, because listeners probably don't know that we as a team heavily rely on Skype. We have a group chat room, which is our virtual office, and it's how we keep in touch with each other throughout the day, every day. I mean, we practically live together, which is quite sad. And when I tried to load that up on the Lumia 800 with the beta version, it would always crash. But now it works great, and it keeps in sync perfect. But still, there's no background operation, so once you come away from Skype and do something else on your Windows Phone 7 device, no one can call you or talk to you. And still, there's no deeper contact integration, which people were hoping for. But the way Windows Phone 7 is made, that wasn't really possible. But hopefully with the next Windows Phone 8, we might get there. We don't know.
I'll be told in time, and I'm guessing that a lot of it will involve rewrites on later versions of the operating system. Speaking of software, let's go for our weekly applications of the week. Links for these are back on the website or in the little bar at the bottom of the show notes if you're using the AAWP application available from the Windows Marketplace. While you're there downloading that, you can maybe download one of the next four applications as chosen by our team. Steve, let's start with you first. What's caught your eye this week?
Well, literally catching my eye. I've been watching SPB TV. Now, this is a completely free TV streaming system. Anybody can watch it anywhere in the world, any of the channels, which is rather interesting, but up to 100 channels, depending on what languages you speak, which ones you can understand. SPB was a company that developed cross-platform software for the last 4 or 5 years, and SPB TV used to be a premium program, so you had a few channels for free and then you pay to get the rest. At some point, SPB TV was broken out as its own company, as its own product. And ever since then, it's been completely free. There's no reason why everyone shouldn't go and grab it from the Windows Phone Marketplace. And I mention it not just to say that it's quite a neat way of watching streaming TV, quite reasonable performance on Windows Phone. Also, to say they've got a survey up, and there's a story up on the site where you can click through and win a new smartphone up to $1,000 US. So, and a couple of prizes for second and third place as well, just for answering a few questions about your viewing habits. So, well worth doing. You might win a smartphone or money, and in the meantime, enjoy SPB TV like I've been doing.
There we go. Rafe, as we mentioned earlier in the podcast, you've been away traveling, and I know there's a gamut of travel applications available for Windows Phone. Which one was the one that made your trip worthwhile?
Well, I think we've mentioned the British Airways application before, so I'm not going to go into too much detail on that, but I will say that was very useful in terms of keeping track of flights and actually being able to check in and get a virtual boarding pass.
Just a shame it's on British Airways, really, isn't it?
I think you and I are going to have to disagree that I'm quite like flying British Airways. But anyway, the app of the week I wanted to mention was TripIt. This is basically a service that helps you keep track of your itineraries on trips, as well as various other tools related to that. Kind of the claim to fame is you email it, it's your itinerary, and it will pass it automatically and present it to you in a nice format. And then you can have this application on your phone and see all your upcoming trips with all the information about hotel reservations, British Airways flights, or whichever other airline you might choose to fly, as well as dinner reservations and other bits and pieces. In its basic version, that's kind of, if you like, itinerary management. That is very helpful in itself. Any of you who try to keep track of that stuff on your phone, having it all in one place, very handy, especially when you need to look up your hotel address when you're filling in custom forms or something like that. There is also a kind of a pro version. It's an annual subscription. It costs, I think it's $50 altogether, and that starts giving you some extra things. Like, for example, it will give you instant alerts about flight delays, cancellations, or gate changes that can arrive via text message. Maybe a missing opportunity there they could have used to push notifications. But also, it's about finding alternative flights, tracking points from your loyalty cards, and also doing things like getting flight refunds. That applies more to the US market, where there's some regulations around timings and airlines offer certain offerings. So it kind of automates that process for you. So it can very quickly save back the $50 if you're a regular traveler. It also makes it easy to share your travel plans with various people. But I just thought, as an application, just on the free version for managing your itinerary, it was a handy way to keep everything in your phone, and just the automatic passing of emails, where they come from an airline, a travel agent, or whatever, is very clever indeed, and makes it dead simple to set these things up. And after all, simplicity is one of the things you really want, because you don't want to have to enter all this information manually. You want it done all automatically for you. So well worth a download, and that's TripIt, which is available for free from the Windows Phone Marketplace.
There we go. David, let's go with you for our third application. Our resident hacker, I'm guessing that you have something light and fluffy, or at least one that you think is light and fluffy.
Oh yes, well, I thought I'd pick something characteristic, and actually I'm going to describe a scenario that happened last week where I actually think Rafe could have done with the application I'm going to talk about. I am going for the SSH Client Pro, and for those who don't know, SSH stands for Secure Shell, which is a way to get an encrypted a command line interface to a remote computer over an encrypted connection. And I found this very handy because I'm doing some little bits of development on my own web server, and it's been good just to be able to, when I'm not at the laptop, I can log into my server and just type in a few commands and run a few scripts and just test some stuff that I was doing. And it was last week, Rafe had no sooner got to the airport than our server decided to keep dying, and we can't reboot it. And I can imagine poor Rafe in the airport waiting room. He was having to pull out his laptop. He was getting texts and panic-laden texts and emails from all of us saying, the server's gone down, help! And he was probably having to find somewhere to get his laptop out and get into the server and fix things, whereas if he'd had this application, he could have just pulled the phone out of his jacket pocket, connected to the server, and rebooted it on his phone.
It's funny you should say that, Dave, because that's exactly what I did.
Oh, bravo, sir, bravo.
I did get a fairly funny look from the customs, or rather the security guards I was going through, and all these text messages were going off. Most inopportune moment as it went through the security scanner, but once I was through, I was able to sort it out. It did take me just a few moments to work out what the problem was in the initial restart of the Apache, that's the web, so it didn't quite do the trick, so it was a bit more involved. But yes, SSH Pro, which I have installed on my phone for that exact reason, did save the day in the end. So I do apologize for the downtime that we did have. Do try and avoid that if at all possible. But yes, this application and my phone were the route to the rescue.
So guys, next time we get a hold of Rafe's phone, we have to change his SMS ringtone to the same alarm as when you go through the metal detector. Okay? Because I'm evil like that. Speaking of evil time sinks, I know it's the last 7 days, but it's just came out in Xbox Live, which is the latest version of Wordament. I know we've mentioned this before. 4x4 grid, you have to find as many words as possible by joining letters and only using them once in each word. It's a timed game for 2 minutes, and then your score is compared to everybody else in the world who is playing that same grid at the same time over the same 2 minutes. It's a lovely mix of solos, patience type, but also with a little competitive element that you kick in at the end. You can constantly improve, constantly build up score, see how well you are doing. It's been an indie hit for the last year. It's moved over to Xbox Live the morning of the recording of this podcast, so hopefully that's going to make a lot more people using Wordament. It does mean, though, that if you're an existing user, you'll get the new version of the software, and all the score you've built up in the last year, they're going to be zeroed. You have to start again from scratch with your gamer tag name and not your Wordament username. The guys at Wordament have tried the best way to get it to carry forward. They couldn't, so they decided to immortalize the last 365 days in their yearly scoreboard of the best 2,500 players in the world over the last 12 months. And they're going to start the clock all over again and see who does well over the next 12 months as well. Wordament is a free download from Xbox Live. There's still your 200 gamer points available in there as well. A little bit of a subtle in-game and in-app advertising, but really, if you're in the middle of a time game, when are you ever going to tap a banner? I don't know either. But there you go. Wordament on Xbox Live. My choice there. My choice, David's SSH client, Race Trippet, and Steve's SPB TV, all linked back from the website and the show notes, where you can leave your comments and let us know your thoughts and opinions on the issues discussed in the podcast today. If you've been affected by any of them, please do get in touch and we will offer what support we can. But from now, thank you from Steve Litchfield.
That's a goodbye from me, and a little apology for all little chirrups and beeps going off to the show. Some of them were me, some were David, some were you, and some were Rafe. It's one of the hazards of listening to a mobile phone tech podcast. Goodbye for now.
Oh, none of them were me. I duck all the microphones so you can't hear things going.
Yeah, yeah.
David Gilson. Well, my phone was on mute, I'll have you know. Anyway, thank you for listening, everybody, and thank you for listening to me talk so much this week.
And Rachel, you'll be happy to know that you're only 5 minutes over everybody else in the chess clock.
Excellent. Well, my phone was on, and I do apologise for some of the chirps, but at least the cat wasn't trying to join in the podcast like he sometimes does.
Yeah, because the cat is an iOS fan, and that's why the cat never appears on the podcast. I'm Ewan Spence. You are whatever your name is. Just look down and look at your Twitter handle. Thanks very much for listening. We shall catch you next week on The Insight. Say, Steve. We'll catch you soon. Ta-ra for now.